Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman, and this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Welcome back to the show. Today, I am here to talk about sex work. And to help me do that is Caitlin Bailey. She is a stand-up comic, a sex worker rights activist, and the executive director of Old Pros. Thank you so much for being here, Caitlin.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a big topic.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. Huge topic. Lots of different elements to hit on. We're so excited to have you here because there's been a lot of news in this area. I think our listeners most recognizably know about OnlyFans, but since that activity, there has been even more happening and more high stakes news stories that could really affect the landscape for sex workers. So we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually want to push back on that and say that, you know, what affects sex workers actually affects all of us. You know, we recently went through that whiplash story with OnlyFans, you know, threatening to remove erotic content. And then the whole internet asked, like, you know, but what else do you do? But now there's actually a case moving forward against Twitter, conflating you know, the presence of some underage sexual content with human trafficking. And so, you know, if that case is allowed to move forward, you know, this is really what sex workers have been, frankly, screaming about since the passage of SESTA-FOSTA way back in April of 2018. You know, the Backpage trial is moving forward. It's in court right now as we speak. And now with this case against Twitter, we are really looking at a future where big platforms have no choice but to completely censor wall-to-wall all erotic content because of this continued historic generational conflation with human trafficking and violent sexual exploitation against children with adult consensual sex work, otherwise known as the oldest profession.
Got it. Yeah. And you know what, even as I was, you know, writing my questions out for you, I was, you know, I am pretty careful with my words, but I found myself having to just double check myself even more than I normally do, because I think it's not new for people, but it is one of the more under-considered areas of intersectional feminism. And I don't think people have been as willing to really adopt the vocabulary and the frameworks that are necessary. So, like, definitely keep pushing back if I say, like I want to talk to you about, like, I was writing about Catherine McKinnon's essay, and I almost called her an anti-porn feminist, but I was like, is there such thing as an anti-porn feminist? So there's lots of, like, there's lots of conversations about feminism, intersectional feminism that come up as you discuss this, that, as you said, affect all of us.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we do at Old Pros and what I do at the Oldest Profession podcast is look at things from a historic perspective, right? Because I think a lot of these tensions are easier to see with 100 years, you know, between what's happening. And this conflict between erotic content or obscene content and feminism is as old as feminism itself. In fact, Susan B. Anthony, right, one of the founders of the Seneca Fall Conventions in the 1860s, one of the OG feminists, actually did the entire movement a disservice by exiling Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to open up, you know, a Wall Street investment firm. She was the first woman to address Congress on the issue of suffrage, actually arguing that the 14th and 15th Amendment already gave women the right to vote because we are citizens. And she specifically excluded her because of her history as a sex worker. So this is this is an old fight.
Yeah, definitely. Oldest profession. And it turns out one of the oldest tensions in feminism.
Absolutely.
So, as I said, last month, OnlyFans moved to ban, quote, sexually explicit content, in a move that sparked a really strong response from users and advocates. They eventually reversed course. We're going to talk about why that is sort of why that leaves a lot of issues for sex workers. But before we do that, I want to ask you why you think that did happen, why you think they reversed course.
I think that, you know, OnlyFans got big enough, right, to attract real investment and to come under increased scrutiny by, you know, by banking institutions, right? MasterCard and Visa right now are sort of being, frankly, threatened, right, by the government to get stricter about cracking down on erotic content creators, right? This ongoing conflation between human trafficking and, you know, adult consensual sex workers has led to legislators, right, threatening anybody that does any kind of banking or moving money. You know, law enforcement is really getting involved in like even Venmo transactions, trying to crack down, quote unquote, on human trafficking. But when you conflate human trafficking with erotic content, then everything that OnlyFans does, this is exactly what brought down Pornhub, right? You know, it's MasterCard and Visa sort of refusing to absorb the liability of this conflation, right? So it's easier for them to threaten to cut off business with OnlyFans. And so then OnlyFans turning around trying to change their you know, terms and conditions and their policies in order to comply with this very, very silly law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to focus on that conflation today. But as I said, even as I was preparing for today, I was like, I'm sure that's all she has to talk about, like, is putting too much emphasis on that, like, against the point. That must be frustrating that it is, of course, a small part of the content online, but it defines the debate for you, it seems.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I think it's really important to talk about what exploitation is, because I think that what we've done essentially in this country is we've used prostitution as a symbol for exploitation, which gets in the way of us really seeing what exploitation and violent coercion looks like, because it is not limited to the sex industry, right? After, you know, the year that we've just had, you know, what workers have been going through, we have labor movements that are advocating for better conditions. You know, there are people that are absolutely working in slave-like conditions here in the US. That's not limited or unique to the sex industry. I also think that the idea of, you know, women's sexual agency is in fact an existential threat to patriarchy. You know, it's this idea that, you know, we can walk around making choices about with whom and what we do with our bodies. You know, I see a direct connection between the law in Texas, right, you know, effectively banning access to safe and legal abortion with this continued insistence that women are not active agents in our own lives, but are instead gullible, childlike creatures, that it is society's responsibility to protect us from our own choices. In fact, the same state that just banned abortion is also the same state that raised the legal age for people to dance at strip clubs, right? They went from 18 to 21. This happened a few months ago. And so overnight, every 18, 19, and 20-year-old stripper in Texas lost their job, all in the name of cracking down on trafficking and exploitation. But like, look, you don't have to be a public policy expert to realize that taking 18, 19, and 20-year-old, you know, taking their livelihood away is not going to reduce violence and exploitation. It is simply going to push those workers into the criminal underground, into full service sex work, into doing things that they otherwise wouldn't, because you just took their livelihood away.
That is so crazy, because you certainly can get, Texas will let you marry a man at 18, and I'm pretty sure they'll let you do it earlier than that if you have, you know, your parents' permission.
I think you could ride a motorcycle without a helmet. I mean, it's, you know.
That's the thing about all these Texas laws. They're very un-Texan.
You can do things with firearms that nobody would recommend.
Right, exactly.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
So let's talk about this essay that came out yesterday. I'm old enough that I went to women's college and Catherine MacKinnon was introduced to me as like a great scholar and somebody whose work was very, should be taken very seriously. Not that it shouldn't, it makes an impact and we have to talk about it. But she is definitely not a, she's a SWERF, I would say. she's leader of the SWERF. So she's a noted anti-porn scholar, been around for a long time. And yesterday she wrote an essay that was, it was titled OnlyFans is not a safe platform for sex work. It's a pimp. Basically though, she used it to basically like vaguely connect OnlyFans to all of her grievances with sex work. And she used some really intense language that I think characterizes this, this bad faith debate that we're talking about. In it, she uses really specific experiences, real experiences, but very specific experiences of women who were clearly at one point, they're like sex trafficked or forced into non-consensual sex work. And she brings up these to denounce the term sex work completely. I'll read a quote. She writes, sex work implies that prostituted people really want to do what they have no choice in doing, that their poverty, homelessness, prior sexual abuse as children, subjection to racism, exclusion from gainful occupations, or unequal pay plays no role. And she blamed OnlyFans for, quote, legitimizing sexual abuse for a job. So why is it so important to disentangle, as you said, the conversation about consensual sex work with the conversation about degrading content in some types of pornography? And further, why do some people willfully refuse to do that?
You know, I also am old enough to remember Catherine McKinnon introduced to me in my women's and gender studies classes and, you know, participating in my Take Back the Night rallies. And it's confusing to me because, you know, so many of my heroes, so many, you know, really brilliant women that I grew up in admiration, right? Catherine McKinnon, Gloria Steinem is another figure that I think refuses to acknowledge that policing prostitution isn't protection, it's patriarchy, right? If you continue to insist on sicking law enforcement, right? A population that self-reports a 40% rate of domestic violence, right? An institution notorious for inflicting violence, not just on women, but also, you know, Black communities, immigrant communities, marginalized communities, to refuse to see the impact of the criminal justice system and this ongoing campaign to try to censor and arrest our way out of a social problem, right? If you want to talk about anti-trafficking initiatives that might have an impact that will absolutely help people in a desperate situation, let's talk about universal healthcare. Let's talk about expanding housing for queer youth. Let's talk about, you know, creating not just a social safety net, but a floor, right, beneath which nobody has to participate in degrading, you know, horrific labor that they find, you know, personally, viscerally repulsive or against their dignity, whether that means working at a slaughterhouse, right? Or, you know, performing cunnilingus, like whatever you, nobody should have to participate in work that they hate or loathe. But I have bad news for Catherine McKinnon and Gloria Steinem is that this is not an issue that is limited to patriarchy, right? We have exploited workers, right, of all genders, of all races, of all nationalities in this country, and to continue to insist, right, that it always looks like this caricature, right, of human trafficking, right? You know, I never thought that I would have to say to a distinguished scholar like Catherine McKinnon, but like Taken was not a documentary, right? The movie that you have in your head of what sexual exploitation looks like has absolutely no resemblance to the lived experience on the ground, and eradicating platforms that directly connect, right, clients to erotic porn performers who are able, right, to negotiate their own boundaries, negotiate their own rates, and perform these acts within the comfort and safety of their own home, and to pretend that that is the biggest problem facing women in the same week that we lost access to safe and legal abortion in Texas, I think is a willful misunderstanding that I can, you know, I can no longer sit by and pretend that this is just a generational misunderstanding.
Right, exactly. I mean, as you're speaking, it's like, with the Texas abortion law, they're not saying, okay, have your baby and we will support you. Just come tell us. It's like, they're not saying, if you feel like sex work is your only option, we will then
absolutely
support
Catherine McKinnon is not fighting for a public policy that gives a guaranteed minimum basic income, right, to everyone in the country, right? That's an anti-trafficking, right? She's not offering, you know, housing for victims of, you know, domestic violence. And the truth is that human trafficking It looks a lot more like domestic violence in this country than it does like, you know, drug trafficking, right? As much as we would love to believe that there's this, you know, small network of, you know, malicious men and in top coats or something sitting around in a room scheming on, you know, how to further degrade the, you know, great women of this country. That's not what's happening, right? It's people are trying to make a living. And when you talk about ways of empowering women, especially, purchasing power is a real thing. The ability to get our needs met, right? The ability to feed our children, the ability to spend time with our families, the ability to, as sex work offers a lot to actual real women that contemporary feminism isn't.
Right. I mean, I think about this a lot, where capitalism sucks. A lot of us hate our jobs. A lot of us would prefer to do different jobs. But it seems like with sex work, that becomes an instant disqualifier. It's like, if it's not her favorite activity to spend every second of her day doing, then she shouldn't do that. Well, by that logic, I should quit my job. Listeners should probably quit their jobs. Do you find it hard to sort of balance the, like, I feel like that's really built into the slogan, sex work is work. But is that also a tension sometimes?
It is absolutely a tension. You know, the sex worker rights movement wouldn't be, a progressive movement if there wasn't, you know, sort of internal disagreement on how to frame this and what public policies are. I personally believe that, yes, sex work is work, and it is also sex. And I think that if we go about trying to legislate or regulate sex work as though it were, you know, the kind of job that you can enforce like OSHA regulations on, then we're going to end up with a dystopian nightmare that really only benefits brothel owners or large platforms, right? What we need to do is frame two consensual adults, right? Whether they're negotiating that consent based on money or mutual pleasure, it is not the state's business. It is certainly not the role of any law enforcement agency to try to arrest, right, or detain anybody for engaging in adult consensual sex, whether money is exchanged or not. In that sense, I think that we do better thinking about this through the lens of the LGBT movement, right? You know, when we criminalized homosexuality in this country, right, as we did as part of a sort of gay panic that happened after World War I and World War II, right, you see these laws really start to descend upon the country in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, where we criminalized, cross-dressing, we criminalized gay bars. You know, Stonewall, the famous center of the start of the gay rights movement, was an illegal bar run by the mafia. Not because gay men love Italians, although I would not blame them, but because it was a criminalized activity, right? The same thing can be said about sex work. The thing that makes this work dangerous, right, is not the fact that sex between people is inherently sinful. I hope that we have moved past that, at least legislatively in the 21st century, but that when you criminalize something, you push it into the underground. And I am genuinely worried about all of the erotic content performers, sex workers, you know, people who are trying to feed their families, this, you know, increasing drumbeat where every platform that they manage to, you know, find a foothold on, right? OnlyFans was recurring monthly income. It's very difficult to replace that, right, on a whim. You know, I supported my podcast through Patreon for the first 2 years. And I'll tell you that, you know, if that platform went away because somebody somewhere decided that we were promoting prostitution, that is the future that Catherine McKinnon, despite all of her legal scholarship, despite all of her, you know, self-declared feminist beliefs, is actively fighting for. And I just don't understand it.
Yeah,
I don't understand. Neither. I don't understand how you can be a legal scholar and a feminist with any sense of history and not see the historic trend of the conflation of information about women's bodies, access to contraception. That was legally defined as obscenity, right? We have been trying to crack down on, on information about birth control. This goes back to the 1860s, this idea that somebody who would call themselves a feminist would be fighting so hard to take the livelihood and security away from so many marginalized peoples just continues to boggle the mind.
I know, patriarchy, it's a hell of a drug.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
How have some platforms like Pornhub, for example, how have they sort of actually really failed to police child pornography or actual bad criminal content in a way that has made your job and sex worker rights advocates' jobs much worse or much harder? You know,
there was a really great piece that Elizabeth Nolan Brown put out today about the upcoming case against Twitter and how it intersects with the ongoing case on Backpage and sort of all of these banking regulations and the continued fallout essentially from SESTA, FOSTA, and federal laws like it, right? Where you put content, you put platforms in the impossible position of having to decide basically between responding to their users or, you know, flying foul of this law. You know, there's... she does a much better breakdown of the legal analysis, but essentially users ought to have the ability to report content that they, for whatever reason, don't want on the platform. And the platform ought to have the ability and the infrastructure to remove that content. And so what happened in the case of Pornhub is there were a couple of really specific cases that were brought to the attention of, you know, admin, and no action was taken. And I think there's the rub, right? And so the solution, right, that the, you know, that the federal government in Congress and its infinite wisdom has come up with is just to erase all erotic content from the internet. And that will solve the problem forever, right? Then we can just erase pornography. Never mind that it predates money and the internet and every technology
erase
ever known to man.
All the boobies. Get
rid
of them all.
If we just erase titties from the internet, then we can solve exploitation. Right. And so that is very frustrating, but you know, there are not, there are no heroes in these stories, right? You know, the founders of Backpage, Lacey and Larkin, are award-winning journalists who sort of built a reputation on being pugnacious contrarians, which I respect. And I think that, you know, this country needs that kind of journalism. And Backpage, the website, sort of came out of the weekly independent newspaper empire that they built. You know, if you loved reading about local bands, right, in your mid-size city, then you owe a debt of gratitude to the founders of Backpage who made that possible, even as the, you know, advertising structures changed, and they funded a lot of that work through Backpage ads. Specifically those founders, there are pages and pages and pages of law enforcement lauding their efforts to cooperate with them to find known minors, right? They cooperated with reported missing youth. They cooperated with law enforcement when there was evidence of violence or exploitation. But what they refuse to do, and what they are facing, what they are facing federal charges in court right now as we speak for, is they refuse to conflate adult consensual sex work with human trafficking. And they refuse to give up the names and the IDs and the addresses of people that purchased ads to engage in what they considered adult consensual sex work. And that's where they ran into trouble. And I personally think that they're taking a heroic stance, and I don't know where Twitter and Facebook and sort of the behemoths on this are going to fall. It might be easier for them to simply erase sex workers from their platforms than to fight the principled fight that everybody has a right to engage in the kind of sex that they want.
Yeah, I mean, as you were talking, I think decriminalize is sort of the overarching message, but mm-hmm. it sounds like even if that were to happen, child pornography would and should remain illegal. So these challenges
absolutely.
Would continue even if tomorrow Congress said solicitation yeah. is fine, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, when sex workers believe that platforms will respect their privacy and protect their identifying information, right? Like Pornhub did this, Backpage did this, OnlyFans did this. You have to upload an ID in order to, you know, in order to buy an ad, in order to, like, there are absolutely internal mechanisms, right, of putting, you know, putting some stops. No system is perfect. And at the scale that these folks are operating on, there, you know, with enough will, there's always a way, right? I'm not quite sure what Twitter could have done to prevent two 13-year-olds who were exchanging sex between one another, right? You know,
right,
when
right.
I was 13, gratefully before the technology of smartphones, right? There are some Polaroids that me and my girlfriends put together, you know, there's not much you can do to prevent that kind of work. But in order to upload erotic content for money, then, you know, OnlyFans would have required an ID. Pornhub would have required an ID. Backpage would have required an ID. But those IDs are hard. You know, people will go through extreme measures to protect their identity if they think that that's going to be compromised. Because what sex workers have learned over the last 100 years of ongoing oppression is that we don't want to be put on any lists.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't want our kids taken away.
No, definitely not. I mean, as you've gone through this conversation, I mean, the sex worker rights movement is surfacing issues, labor issues, mm-hmm. privacy issues that yes. benefit all of us. Where can people, if they want to pay yeah. attention to this on an ongoing basis, hear more from you and on the topic?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think sex worker rights is it's a red thread that really runs totally. Through all of the social justice movements, right? You know, housing, income, race, incarceration, you know, gender, This is all of it. We are everywhere. We do a weekly newsletter that we send out every Friday. It's a roundup of sex worker rights related news from around the country and everything that we're doing at Old Pros. You can sign up at oldproinc.com. You can also follow us across social media at Old Pro Inc. I'm at Caitlin Bailey. We have a lot of projects coming up. Season 4 of the Oldest Profession podcast is launching awesome. In November. As is a weekly podcast that is all about sex worker rights related news. That's going, we're very excited to roll that out. That's coming out in November. And we hope to have a touring show where we can bring, you know, speakers and advocates and sex worker performers together and, you know, gather like-minded folks in a room and talk about how we can fight against the oldest fight.
Yeah, lots of different ways to bring it out of the shadows, for sure. It's so important.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time, Caitlin. We really appreciate it. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman, and this is the Betches Sup Podcast.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.